कुर्वन् गीताम्रतं ददौ लोकत्रयोपकाराय तस्मै कृष्णात्मने नमः। हरे कृष्ण। वेलकम बैक टू अवर भगवद्गीता भक्तिशास्त्री कोर्स। वी आर नाउ इन द सिक्स्थ चैप्टर वेर वी आर स्टडिंग द कंसर्न्स ऑफ अर्जुन अबाउट प्रैक्टिसिंग अष्टांग योग। सो वी डिस्कस सेवरल वर्सेस यस्टरडे अबाउट प्रोग्रेसिव रियलाइजेशंस। Let's have a quick recap of those verses and their thought flow. Yes. So, in the progressive realization of the absolute truth, the verses 27 and 28 talk about Brahman realization. Then verse 29 talks about Paramatma realization. Verse 30 to 31 talks about Bhagwan realization. So, 27 and 28 talking Sukhena Brahma Samsparsham Atyantam Sukhamashnute. Then, 29 talk about Sarva Bhutastham Atmanam, that all living beings are situated at the spiritual level. And 30 and 31, the word Maam comes very clearly. Yo Maam Pashyati Sarvatra and Sarva Bhutasthitam Yo Maam Bhajati Ekatvam Asthita. So, in both cases, the Maam is coming very explicitly, and that's why we can understand that this is referring to the Bhagwan realization. And then, 32 gives the conclusion that one should see all living beings equally, based on their spiritual equality as parts of Krishna, as absolute, as a particles of the absolute truth, depending on the what is the level of realization of the yogi. Now, one thing we have to understand here, when we say this verse refers to Brahman realizing, this refers to Paramatma realizing, this refers to Bhagavan realization. Actually, the names Brahman, Paramatma and Bhagavan, they are used interchangeably within the Vedic literature. This is an important concept to understand, that there are names, or there are terms and there are concepts. So, just like in the Bhagavatam, we'll see that in the beginning it says Krishna is the source of all incarnations. In the third chapter of the first canto, Krishnastu Bhagavan Swayam. It makes it clear over there. But afterwards, the Bhagavatam uses the terms Krishna and Vishnu interchangeably. So, even in the past time of Prahlad Maharaj, the name Krishna may come, Krishna Grahastatma, and there Vishnu name may also come, and eventually Narasimhadeva may appear. Narasimhadeva appears. So, after giving a technical classification of the terms, then it is not that the Bhagavatam, because it involves multiple speakers, multiple contexts, multiple threads of conversation, the terms may not always be used in the same technical sense everywhere. So, in one sense, we have a technical differentiation between Krishna and Vishnu. Krishna is the source of all incarnations. But then after making that one point, the Bhagavatam, for all practical purposes, uses the terms interchangeably. So, even the Rasa Panchadhyaya section, the term Krishna, Govinda, these are the terms which are used, names which are used. But then, at the end, Vishnu is used. So, the point here is that we should understand that names, the terms and concepts. So, concepts are intellectual, terms are verbal. And they are both tools for comprehension. So, they are what? Tools for comprehension, tools for gaining a deeper understanding. Now, when we use terms and when we use concepts, we are all trying to gain an understanding of the deeper absolute truth. And these terms may not always be used in the same sense and as at all times. Just like, you know, when Krishna may be used to refer to Vishnu and Vishnu may be used to refer to Krishna. Although there is a technical differentiation, in a normal conversational sense, it is not that the technical differentiation will always be adhered to. So similarly, when the words Brahman, Paramatma and Bhagavan are used, sometimes the word Brahman may also be used to refer to the absolute truth in the personal aspect. And the word Paramatma may also be used to refer to the absolute truth in the personal aspect. Krishna may be referred to as Paramatma, Krishna may be referred to as Brahma. We see Vishnu Sahasranam. It is not that Vishnu will always be referred to as Bhagavan only. Vishnu may be used to refer to as Brahma also, as Paramatma also. So the point is, we have to, when we want to look at the meanings of words, we have to understand the broad philosophy and the specific context, and then we can understand what this word refers to. So we have to understand first the overall philosophical message. What is the message? And then we have to look at the specific context. And then we understand, okay, this is the term that is used, and in this term, in this context, this term means this. The scriptures have to be understood always in context. The text and the context are integrally related. If we separate the two, then we do not get proper understanding. So text and context have to be brought together. Now, Brahman, Paramatma, Bhagavan, these are progressive levels of realization. We understand this from the understanding of what the word Brahman means, what the word Paramatma means. So Brahman means all pervasive, pervading, non-personal effulgence of the absolute truth. Then Paramatma refers to the localized manifestation of the absolute truth. And Bhagavan refers to the all-attractive transcendental person. All three are transcendental. All three are spiritual. And this is the when one pursues a particular level, then one is at a Brahman level. Then one pursues the next level, one is at Paramatma level. And pursues the complete absolute truth, that is the Bhagavan level. So in these verses, 27-28, which talks about Brahman, 29 talks about Paramatma, 30-31 talks about Bhagavan. The point is that the yogi is moving higher and higher in spiritual realization. So these verses can be interpreted differently. And different acharyas will interpret in different ways to develop the flow of thought. So this is one way of looking at it, where we understand the progression systematically. Now, when we talk about different acharyas interpreting things differently, the point is that Krishna's words can have unlimited import. Unlimited doesn't mean that any and every import is right. Krishna's words have unlimited import, but ultimately Krishna's message has a conclusion. And whatever import is in consistency with that conclusion, we can use that. But whatever import is not in consistency with that conclusion, that import will not be usable, acceptable. So unlimited doesn't mean that even the Mayavadi's interpretations are right. The interpretations have to be consistent with the overall philosophical message. But once it is consistent, the words can have different meanings. So we are looking at a particular flow of thought, which is based on the Acharya's commentaries, no doubt. But as the Acharya's have different contexts and they give different meanings. So I don't quote in my classes here. I'm planning to write a book eventually where we'll talk more critically, more systematically. In the classes, we are trying to get an overall understanding without going too much into technical nitty-gritties. So we are analyzing a flow which helps us to understand how the Bhagavad Gita's thought is evolving. So Brahman, Paramatma and Bhagavan. The yogi moves forward higher, higher in the realizations. So the word samadarshan, as I mentioned, it was used in 5.18 and it is used again in 6.29. So darshan refers to direct sight, or it can refer to philosophical insight. It has both meanings. Now when we use the word darshan, for when we go and take darshan of the deities, that time we are referring to direct sight. But it can also refer to philosophical insight. When we actually take, when there are six philosophical systems, Shat Darshanas they are called. So philosophy is meant to give us insight. So a darshan can refer to both. And here the word samadarshana, that is used, can result, samadarshana, equal vision can result from seeing the super soul or the soul or both. So in 5.18, both are there, and 6.29 talks primarily about the super soul. So 5.18 was Vidya Vinaya Sampanne. That was the verse, well-known verse. And one can see the super soul and the super soul and thereby see with equal vision. In 6.29, it's primarily vision of super soul that is there. So then after that, now 6.29, Sarva Bhutastham Atmanam Sarva Bhutani Jatmani. Does it support Mayavad? Oh, one sees the absolute truth everywhere. Actually, Mayavad's propositions are much more insidious than just a non-person, just a sense of oneness. A devotee also has a sense of oneness. What characterizes Mayavad is not just sense of oneness, but also the sense that everything else is an illusion. That there's only Brahman and the Tattvatraya, the Jiva, Jagat and Jagdish. All three are illusion. That is the proposition of Mayavad. That's an offensive proposition. That is definitely not supported by the Bhagavad Gita. So now, let's look at where all Krishna is being talked about in the Bhagavad Gita. So there's a lot over here. Till now, where all has Krishna come? Krishna has the mention of Krishna as self-reference, mom. Where all has it come in the Bhagavad Gita? In the 6th chapter in Dhyan Yoga, in 6.14 and 15 it has come. Machitto yukta manasanyamya machitto yukta asita matpara. This came in 6.14. So there it can refer to Krishna as the object of meditation. It doesn't have to be the goal of meditation. What is the difference between object and goal? What is the difference between object and goal? A student may have physics as the object of study. But the goal of study is not physics. The goal of study is maybe the student wants to go to America. And in America the student wants to be prosperous, be famous, get a lucrative job. So that physics may not be the object of interest primarily. The object of interest is just money and fame. And physics is a tool to that. So in the process of yoga, the yogi can have two attitudes towards Krishna. One attitude is that Krishna is the absolute truth who is my goal. And the other is Krishna is the object of meditation. And eventually by using this object of meditation, I will go to a higher reality. So it's not necessary. And mat samstham adhigacchati is talked about in 6.15. 6.15 is mat samstham adhigacchati. So attains my abode, attains my position. That is the spiritual sky that's talked about over there. Now in 6.30, Krishna talks about yomam pashyati sarvatra sarvam jamai pashyati. One who sees me everywhere and sees everything in me. This is the culmination of Dhyan Yoga. So ultimately Dhyan Yoga leads to samadhi. So of course, Srila Prabhupada, when he was correlating Dhyan Yoga with Bhakti Yoga, he would generally quote 6.47, which is very categorical among all yogis. Bhakti Yoga is the highest. One of the things about me, that is Bhakti Yoga is highest. Yogina api sarvesha madgatina antaratmana. That 6.47, we will come to later. But here the point is, there is culmination of Dhyan Yoga. When Krishna is within that progression, he is leading to Bhakti Yoga. And then after that, the significance of 6.31, if you have to see, 6.29 says, sees all beings in the Atma. 6.30 says, sees all beings in me, that yogi. And then the all-pervading one is equal to me. So, the seer is the yogi who is always situated in me. That means, what Krishna is telling, that the person who is having the vision of 29 and the vision of 30, they are the same. First we see all pervading being as Atma. Here Atma refers to the Paramatma. The Paramatma and I are the same. So there is a progression over here. Now let's go to Arjuna's question. So Arjuna is going to ask here. Yoyam yogastvaya proktaha. So Arjuna vacha. Yoyam yogastvaya proktaha samyena madusudana etasyaham na pashyami chanchalatvat sitim sthiram. So yoyam, what you have told me, O Krishna, this system, yoyam yogas tvaya proktaha, what you have talked about me, samyena, so it focused on samya, a oneness of perception. So Krishna has talked about samadarshanaha muktistim yoyam bhajate ekatvamashita sarvathavartamanopi. So yogi mai vartate. So samya has come again and again. Equanimity, equality of emotion and perception. So etasyaham na pashyami. I don't see it. So now it's interesting. Arjuna uses the word pashyami. Krishna has used the word pashyami just 2 verses earlier. This is 6.33 and 3 verses earlier. And 6.30. Yomam pashyati sarvatra. I see everything. But Krishna has used the same, Arjuna has used the same word, etasyaham na pashyami. So Krishna is telling that, you are saying that I should be able to have an equal vision everywhere. So I don't think it's possible for me. No, I can't see like this. Etasyaham na pashyami. I can't see everyone equally. Chanchalatvat sitim sthiram. Sitim sthiram. Chanchalatvat. The mind is not stable. It is not in a steady situation, it is in a restless situation. Chanchalatvat. It is constantly restless. So now, Krishna is being told by Arjuna, you are saying I should see all living beings equally. But I don't think I can see Yudhishthira and Duryodhana equally. I can't see Karna and Bhima equally. I can't see Shakuni and people on my side. I can't see them equally. It's difficult. So it doesn't seem practical to me. Yoyam yogastvaya prokta. What you have spoken. So we see Arjuna is expressing submission as well as reservation. You know, submission means I will do whatever you say. Reservation means I can't do what you say. So we may say, how can both be there? Actually, there is submission and reservation. Submission means, yes, I am not saying what you are saying is wrong. See, when we say that somebody, what somebody is saying is wrong, that will be not, that can be offensive. So Arjuna is not offensive, he is submissive. He is expressing submission, yes, what you are saying is okay, but it is not practical for me, it's not possible for me. So there is submission, yes, oh, you have spoken this, but reservation is, I can't do this. So it's an interesting combination, submission and reservation. And we see this even in Dhruva Maharaj, when Narad Muni gives him two sets of instructions, two levels. He says that, you know, a child, sometimes, you know, parents chastise the child. Narad Muni tells us, Dhruva Maharaj. You know, sometimes children are in joking also, they say this and that. And what happens between parents and children is not to be taken too seriously. You couldn't, just a small thing, you couldn't sit on your father's lap. The next day, your father will allow you to sit. And he says that, as a child, children don't take such things seriously. Children sometimes, you know, when they quarrel, sometimes they say, Katti, you know, now I'm not going to talk with you. So, when they say, I'm not going to talk with you, and we'll see after 3-4 days, both the children are playing together. Not just talking, but playing happily together. So, he says, children don't take such things seriously. What happens among children is not taken seriously. And he says, if you think you're not a child, if you're grown up, if truly grown up, not just physically but also spiritually, then you should know for such people, honor and dishonor is the same. So even if you've been dishonored, don't bother about it. You know, treat honor and dishonor equally. So when Narad Muni tries to test Dhruva by checkmating him, if you're at this level, still you should not take it seriously. If you're at this level, you should not take it seriously. And what does Dhruva Maharaj say? He's not Maharaj at that time. He's a small child Dhruva at that time, 5 years old. So what does he say? He's expressing submission, but he also expresses reservation. He says, yes, but actually I'm in an intermediate stage. You know, Kshatriya blood is running within me. And because the Kshatriya blood is running, I cannot tolerate insult. So, you know, just accepting it is not possible for me. I need a way to get even. I need a way to show father and others that I can get a kingdom bigger than theirs. What to speak of sitting on the throne, on the lap of my father who is sitting on the throne. I want a throne for a kingdom which is bigger than my father's. I don't want to, you know, actually his idea was that you sit on a throne. The father sitting on the throne and the son sit on the lap of the father. Even that was not allowed for me. But what I want is, I will sit on the exclusive throne for a kingdom which is bigger than my father's. In fact, not just my father, my whole dynasty. That is the only way the feeling of insult, the feeling of dishonor that is burning my insides will be resolved. So, please tell me a way, Vaijikari. So, he accepts that your instructions are true, but I am not at that level to follow the instructions. So, sometimes when we are told, when you are given instruction, just follow the instructions. It is a good attitude to aspire for, but whether we can do that, it's not that Prabhu, we have to always put aside our intelligence when we are given instructions. If we feel that this is not practical for me, then we have the right to accept our express our reservations. Sometimes we may hear in some classes, somebody would say, everybody should chant 64 rounds every day. Now, yes, it's a good aspiration to chant 64 rounds, but it may not be practical all the time. So, we have to, Arjuna expresses realistic reservations over here. See, our aspiration is very lofty. We want to be pure devotees of Krishna, constantly absorbed in the remembrance of Krishna. So, we want to go towards that, but how do we go towards that? See, in spiritual life, there are the stars and there are the stairs. The stars are what we aspire to. Stairs are the steps that we take to go there. the stars and the stairs. So if you just look at the stars and don't look at the stairs, then we'll never move up. We'll just, oh, it's so high level. That's there. That's not, we, and if you look only at the stairs and don't look at the stars, then we will not feel inspiration. Oh, I can get there also. Just by doing one step at a time, one step at a time, one step, I can eventually get there. Then, so we need the stars and the stairs. So here Arjuna is expressing submissive reservation. He says, Ekasena Pashyami. He says, I can't see this practical for me. It is not practical for me because the mind is restless. Chanchala tvat sitim stiram. Chanchala. Chanchala is restless. And then he will elaborate on this. So Prabhupada explains in the purport that it was difficult even for Arjuna. Now some people may argue, the Prabhupada writes at various places that there is no record of Arjuna having practiced the system of Ashtanga Yoga ever. Now some people will say that Arjuna, he went into the forest, if you read the Mahabharata, and he would do meditation. For example, he went to the, when he was in the Himalayas, where he was doing austerity so that he would please Lord Shiva. So he was sitting in a yogic asana and he was doing meditation, or he was doing other kinds of austerities which involved yogic meditation. So you have to understand that that is not Ashtanga Yoga. See, sitting in a yogic asana doesn't make a person a yogi. Necessarily a person has to be a, sitting in a yogic asana doesn't make a person a practitioner of Ashtanga Yoga. A devotee may also sit in a yogic asana and do bhakti yoga. So when we see that in the Mahabharata, Arjuna is sitting in a yogic posture and meditating on Lord Shiva, so that Lord Shiva will grant him weapons. And then he wants to meditate on Lord Indra, on Indra, so that Indra will give him weapons. That is in the Vanvas, when the Kauravas are there, Pandavas are in Vanvas at that time. So Arjuna's goal is not yogic meditation so that one can get Samadhi and Brahman realization. He is doing demigod worship at that time. And why is he doing demigod worship? That is a part of Bhakti Yoga for him. So he wants to serve Krishna, and whatever is required for the service of Krishna, he's ready to do that. So if he wants to, if he needs weapons, then he takes the weapons from Shiva, he takes the weapons from Indra. So in the Mahabharata, what is demonstrated is, the devotee is not deprived of the benedictions of other devatas also. The devotee is quite capable of worshipping the other devatas and getting their benedictions also. But ultimately, what empowers the devotee is Krishna's mercy. So Arjuna is not doing Ashtanga Yoga, Arjuna is not doing demigod worship. Arjuna is simply doing devotional service. But he is using the limbs of other, he is using other aspects of Vedic culture as a part of his devotional service. So that is not objectionable. And Arjuna doesn't do yogic sadhana with the yogic sadhya in mind. So, yes, as Yama and Niyam, these can be practiced by people from other paths also. In Bhaktis, Bhakti Yogis can also practice Yama and Niyama. So, like that, yogasana, sitting in yogasana can also be done by Arjuna. That doesn't make Arjuna a yogi. So, the point we are saying is, Arjuna never practiced Ashtanga Yoga as a sadhana for getting liberated from material existence. He may have done some tapasya to appease Lord Vishnu. At that time, he might have sat in yogic asanas. But that doesn't make Arjuna Ashtanga Yogi. So now Arjuna will give one more graphic verse which tells his concerns. What is the problem with? Why is he saying the mind is restless? That's why I can't practice this. He will describe in the next verse. Chanchulam himana Krishna pramathi balavatrudham tasyaham nigraham manye vayor iva sudushkaram. So chanchulam, the mind is restless, he is saying. Manaha Krishna. And then what kind of restlessness? He is giving actually four serious describers. First is restless, chanchalam. Then is pramathi. Pramathi is wild, agitating. Balavat is strong. And drudham is obstinate. So, let's look at each of these. To understand their distinctive implications. See, chanchalam is like a child. Chanchala. We say child is restless. Child is chanchala. So child, if sit down over here. Mother says, sit down over here. I want to do some work. Will the child sit down quietly? Child, okay, let me see what is this toy over here. Let me play with this. Let me go here. Let me go there. And let me do all these things. So a child is restless, and often the restlessness leads to mischief, restlessness leads to maybe fun for the children, mother and father. What is my child doing now? And restlessness may also lead to some kind of occasional danger. The child may fall off from a child sitting on a bed and just falls off the bed. These things are possible. So there may be little danger, but chanchala, so mind is restless. It will go one thing, second thing, third thing, fourth thing. The mind just goes everywhere, trying to explore. There is a childish curiosity can be dangerous, but often it is innocent. So Arjuna uses the first word, yes. Is the mind just like an innocent child? Chanchala, you know, just a childish, naive curiosity is there. No, it's not that much alone. That is one feature of the mind. But the mind, what makes the mind dangerous is that it's not just like a child in curiosity. It is also like a bully in strength. It is chanchalam paramathi palavadrudam. So the second describer is mad. Pramatta is mad. Noonam pramatta kurute vikarma. The word pramatta is used in unmatta, and pramatta is used in many places in the scriptures, and generally first matta is intoxicated, maddened, pramatta. So pramathi, it is maddened over here. So it is agitated to the point of being mad. Sometimes, now when we talk about madness, see, there are different levels of madness. There are some people who are having some dysfunctionality in their brain, because of which they are admitted to some mental asylums. And they're completely disconnected from reality. So, let me say that. I am the president of India. I am the president of America, somebody may say. So, actually these sort of statements, they are indicating of madness. The madness, people get disconnected from reality and they live in a illusory world. Now, in that illusory world, what thought will come to them and how they will act, nobody knows. So I say sometimes some mad people are dangerous, because they think that suddenly a mad person may think that I am on a war field and the person next to me is my enemy and I have to find a gun and shoot the enemy and I am going to save a country and then I will get a Paramvir Chakra. It's so ridiculous. But the mad people can get any idea and act in any way. So a child is not necessarily mad. A child is just innocent. But Krishna is saying the mind is not just like a child, it's a pramati, it's mad. So, you know, there are these kind of people who are put in mental asylums, who are completely disconnected from reality. But we can see that we also go mad sometimes. That means, say, a person becomes obsessed by anger. And a person starts speaking such things, such crazy things. So anger is like temporary madness. It's temporary insanity. When it comes over us, we may do such things, speak such things, that we can't even conceive of, we wouldn't even have dreamt of doing such things at other times, but at that time we do it. So what makes us do it? It's just madness. So pramathi, the mind is mad. And so it's not just restless in an innocent, childish sense, it's a restless in a dangerous, devilish sense. The mind is not just childish, but devilish. Now, pramathi, and then after that, okay, sometimes a mad person is there. Even an ordinary mad person, when the person becomes mad, two, three people in the employees in the asylum are required to get the person to calm down. Okay, sometimes the people have to tie the hands and legs of the person to get the person to calm down. But imagine if the person were a big bully, you know, maybe a boxing champion, you know, huge muscles, and then the person balavad, and that person goes mad, then it would be very, very difficult to bring such a person under control. So the mind is balavad. It's extremely powerful. In fact, in the 11th canto, in the Avanti Brahmana prayers, there is a reference, which says, the mind's God-like power. The mind's God-like power. It's a very significant usage, because the mind, when it takes control of us, it almost becomes omnipotent. And just as God's command cannot be disobeyed, the mind's command, it's almost impossible to disobey. The mind is God-like power. So what is the God-like power of the mind? It's so ferocious. ferocious, it is so irresistible. Like the Bhagavad Gita also in the 10th chapter, when Sri Krishna says, Indriyanam Manaschasmi. Among the senses, I am the mind. So the mind represents the supreme power of Krishna. So Balavat. For all practical purposes, Maya, we can say, is equivalent to the mind. You know, how does Maya come? It's not that Maya is there outside. Yes, Maya, we can say, is there outside. The simplistic way of looking at Maya is for men to think of women as Maya. And Maya, we know, she is female. So, it is very easy for men to think of women as Maya. But then, we also see Saraswati is also female. And Saraswati is the goddess of learning. She gives knowledge. So, we can't just equate the females with Maya. Maya, yes, Maya is a goddess. She has a service. So, Prabhupada, with the Bhagavatam 4th canto, also explained that for a woman, a man can be a Maya. And for a man, a woman can be a Maya. The important point is, Maya is that which takes us away from Krishna. And more important than the external thing that takes us away from Krishna is the internal thing that takes us away from Krishna. And that is the mind. That's why for all practical purposes, Maya means the mind. So ontologically means in terms of existence, in terms of the nature of reality, yes, there is an energy. She is a goddess. Her name is Maya Devi. So she is actually the consort of Lord Shiva, Durga Devi. She functions as Maya Devi also. So there is a being named Maya, and she manifests in various ways. So ontologically, yes, there is an entity called Maya, and she is quite different from the mana. But functionally, practically, for all practical purposes, the mind is Maya. The mind is what makes us act restlessly, irrationally, suicidally, self-destructively. So Brahma, Balavat, is very powerful. So Maya is all-pervasive like Krishna. Maya is, you know, within the material world, Maya is omniscient. Maya is omnipotent. Maya is omnipresent. Just like God. How is that? Maya knows our weaknesses. Like Krishna's, because Krishna has given us free will, and Krishna has given us the material world as an arena to choose how to act according to our free will. So we can choose to serve Krishna or choose to serve Maya. If a person is in jail, the jail has the vigilance system by which the jail knows, okay, where is which prisoner and what is that prisoner doing. So like that, within the material world, which is like a jail, Maya has her vigilance. And Maya knows everything. She is given that power by Krishna. So because she knows everything, she can be extremely dangerous for us. Dangerous in the sense that she can, the Maya can act through our mind and trap us. Maya's goal is not to trap us. Maya's goal is to promote us. But the way it is done is through testing. So Balavat is powerful. Now sometimes a powerful person may also listen to good reason and argument and understand, okay, this is what I have strength that I can do this, but when I see this sense, okay, this doesn't make sense, so I won't do it. But Krishna says here, the mind is obstinate, drudham. So the word drudha has come earlier. Drudha can mean determined in a positive sense. So drudha is a word which can connote determination, but in this context, it means obstinacy. So drudha will come. The word drudha will come several times in the Bhagavad Gita. One prominent place where it comes is in 9.14, where Krishna is describing the external characteristics of a pure devotee, and he says, "Tatam kirtayanto mam yatantascha drudhavrataha." Drudhavrataha. Drudhavrata is resolute determination, the vow of determination. Drudhavrataha. Determined vow. We serve with determined vow. So drudha means determined. So here Krishna is using the word drudha in a sense of obstinacy. So now, what is the difference between determination and obstinacy? Generally, one is used in the positive sense. Determination is something which is good, something which is noble, something which is laudable. When a person faces failures repeatedly in trying to do that and still sticks to doing that, and that is called determination. But obstinacy means when something is undesirable and a person should give that up, and one gets a lot of lessons from different places, indicators, warnings that one should give this up, but one doesn't. That is called as obstinacy. So we say that Ravana's obstinacy in not giving up Sita. Ravana got so many warnings, so many cautions. First of all, he knew that he did not have any protection from Manavas. And he had already seen he had already heard about the power of Ram from various sources. He had heard about the power of Ram from his own general Akampana, who told him that Akampana was the only general who survived the carnage of the Rakshas that Lord Ram single-handedly did in the Dandakaranya. So, all the other Kharadushana, Sudakarama, Kharadushana, everybody was killed. The only general who remained was Akampana. When Akampana came running to the palace of to the court of Ravana, you know, Akampana was doing all Kampana. He was fearfully trembling. And as he was so fearful, what happened? Even he told him, you cannot face him head on. You'll be destroyed. Maricha also told him, you'll be destroyed. You cannot face him head on. Then Vibhishana told him, you'll be destroyed. Then his own generals, you know, those who had gone, Shuka and Saran, who had gone as spies, they told him, Ram's army cannot be faced. Hanuman came, Hanuman told him, surrender, otherwise you'll be destroyed. And Hanuman showed his prowess also. Just one spy coming in destroyed nearly half of his kingdom. Then Angad came, and Angad gave him a warning. And his generals couldn't even move the feet of Angad. It's a long story. Then still he got so many warnings, but he did not take any one of them. So that is obstinacy. That means the difference between obstinacy and determination is primarily whether the track one is going on is right or wrong. So when a person is going on the wrong track and still goes on the wrong track despite being given good instructions and despite giving not just instructions but also demonstrations. Ravana got both, but he just did not listen. Similarly, Duryodhana, he saw so many occasions when all his attempts to try to push down the Pandavas failed. Still after that also, he kept coming back and doing the same things, trying to push the Pandavas down. This is obstinacy. So the mind is obstinate. That means once the mind gets attached to some idea, I want this enjoyment, then the mind just doesn't listen to anything else. No, I want this, come what may. I don't care. The mind gets hooked to a particular idea. It's obstinate. So actually this combination of four things, restlessness, madness, then power, and then obstinacy. This makes the mind extremely dangerous. So Krishna is telling Arjuna, all these four are there. And all these four are there. Dealing with the mind is impossible. So we have our worst enemy right inside us. And Arjuna may be asked by Krishna, hey, no matter how formidable the enemy is, you can always deal with that enemy. You have extraordinary weapons. With those weapons, you can control the enemy. So you have in celestial weapons. Krishna said, Arjuna said, nothing of these will work. Actually, he says, Vayoriva Sudushkaram. That, just the wind blows off, tuck. When the wind is blowing off, if I try to raise my hand, stop, wind, stop, I try to check the wind. Not only can we not stop the wind, many times the objects they blow away because of the wind, we can't stop them also. You know, if I have a heap of papers, and suddenly wind comes and blows, start blowing away. I can catch one paper, second paper, third paper, but they're just blowing away so fast. So like that, when the wind blows, we can't hold on to anything. So even on holding on to the wind, it's difficult often to hold on to things which the wind causes to blow also. So he said, the mind itself is like the wind and tuck, it just blows off. Now it's interesting, Krishna has used a metaphor related with the wind in this chapter itself in 6.19. What was the 6.19?
Yatha deepo nivatastho ningate sopama smitaha yogino yata chittasya ito yogam atmanaha.
So there he has said, deepa nivatastho, that just as the mind, just as the lamp kept in a windless place, does not flicker but stays steady. Similarly, he said that the mind of a yogi stays fixed on the self. So there he has compared wind to material desires. And he says that when one nispriha sarva kame vyayukta itya uchyate, 6.18 that was. So there he has said that one becomes peaceful, steady, when one understands that the mind is free from material desires, and the mind becomes steady, peaceful. So here Arjuna is telling actually what to speak of nivatastho, no wind at all. He says there is such a wind that is irresistible. A windless place, and we contrast a windless place with a place that is hit by a hurricane or a tornado or a cyclone. The wind is so forceful that nothing can be done to check with it. Check it. So actually, vayoriva sudushkaram, like wind, impossible. Even Arjuna said that I have got certain celestial weapons by which I can unleash a storm, or I have got certain celestial weapons by which I can check a storm. But none of these weapons will control the mind. The mind is impossible to control. So here, Arjuna is expressing, because the whole process of Ashtanga Yoga is centered on control of the mind. The word mana has come so many times. Mana, or its cognates means equivalence, have come so many times in this chapter. So now Arjuna's question will be answered by Krishna. So let us see how Krishna answered the question. Now, Prabhupada quotes the famous verse in the purport about controlling the mind. This is in the Katha Upanishad verses there, 1, 3, and 3 and 4. This is the chariot body metaphor. So, Atmanam Rathinam Vidhi, Shariram Rathamevacha, Buddhim Tusarathim Vidhi, Manah Pragrahamevacha, Indriyani Hayanahur, Vishayam Steshu Gocharan, Atmendri Mano Yuktam. So, Atmanam Rathinam, Rathinam. So, the soul is like the chariot here. Shariram Rathamevacha. The body is like the chariot. Buddhim tu Sarathim Vidhi. The intelligence is like the Sarathi. Manah Pragrahamevacha. Pragraha is that which controls the reins. So, that is the mind. Indriyani Hayanahur. Senses are like the horses. Vishayam Steshu Gocharan. So the sense objects are the objects towards which the horses want to run, the senses want to run. Atmendriya mano yuktam bhuktitya ahur manishinaha. So this manishinaha, the souls who have conquered the mind, they try to bhuktitya ahur manishinaha, those souls who have conquered the mind, here is referring to those who are seers. The seers give this metaphor. And what is the metaphor? So it is, Prabhupada said, understood by the great thinkers. So what do they understand? That Atmendriya Manoyuktam, the soul equipped with the mind and senses, Atma, that Atma which is Yuktam, with what? Mandriya and Mana, Bhukteti, the soul tries to enjoy the sense objects. Of course, sometimes the soul gets enjoyment, most of the time the soul gets suffering. So here it's very difficult to control the mind, and the chariot body metaphor is given, and we'll see how chariot body metaphor will develop later in the Bhagavad Gita sections. Now let's look at Krishna's answers. So Krishna first empathizes with Arjuna, and first he says, yes, Arjuna, it's difficult to control the mind, but it is possible. Let me describe to you how it is possible. So when a disciple expresses some doubt, there has to be sympathy. I can't do it. Somebody says, actually, I get angry so easily. What should I do with my anger? What? What is the use? Chanting 10 years and still you get angry? You should be able to control your anger. If you can't control your anger, you are a fallen. Now, we can't give responses which dishearten people. Ultimately, the responses should be encouraging. They have to be they have to be empathetic. Empathetic means they understand their position. See, sympathy generally means that I am at a high level and I offer down sympathy. But empathy means I come down to the level of that person. Sometimes when you are talking with children, generally children are physically small. And if you want to become close to children, one of the easiest ways to come down to their level, to kneel down, to sit down. And if they have to talk all the time, they look up. And that itself creates a discomfort. So, one of the ways to go closer is to come down to their level and talk with them. So similarly, when we want to share Krishna consciousness, also our philosophy is lofty. But at the same time, we have to bring it down to their level. Help them understand how at their level, how they can practice. And then, you know, initially we come down to the level of children, but the children are also growing. They will grow. So like that, we present the philosophy at their level, at the level of people, and then help them grow. As they grow, their level also will increase. So what does Krishna say over here? Shri Bhagavan Vacha Asamshayam Mahabaho Manodurnigraham Chalam Abhyasena Tu Kaunteya Vairagena Cha Grahyate. So Asamshayam Mahabaho, undoubtedly, O Arjuna. Oh Arjuna, Mahabaho is referring, undoubtedly, without any doubt. Manodurnigraham Chalam, it's very difficult to control the mind. Chala, it's restless. Abhyasena tu kaunteya. However, he says, by abhyasa. And vairagena cha grihyate. So, what does Krishna do over here? Krishna tells Arjuna, yes, it's difficult, but it's not impossible. It's possible by right things. Abhyasa and vairagya. So actually, Krishna uses very generic terms over here for telling how to control the mind. The terms he's not using bhakti-specific terms or yoga-specific terms, ashtanga-yoga-specific terms. Just in generic terms. That by abhyasa and by vairagya, it's possible. So what is Krishna recommending a specific process over here? No, he's just giving a general answer. Arjuna's question is also general. How can the mind be controlled? He says, yes, it's possible. By practice and by detachment. So what does this practice and detachment, abhyasa and vairagya, refer to? So these are generic principles on all paths. So we discuss about if a person is sick, then the person has to take the treatment, the therapy. That is the abhyas. And the person has to avoid the items which the person will not to do. So if a person has got a fracture and the person is to be cured, how will the person be cured? The person will tell therapy, you know, walk a little bit, walk in this way, exercise the leg in this way, move these fingers. So that is the abhyas. And then there is the vairagya, okay, don't try to exert yourself too much. Don't do activities that will damage the ligament, that will damage. So in one sense, abhyasa and vairagya is the prescriptions and the proscriptions. So with respect to bhakti yoga, this will apply that when we are trying to practice spiritual life. So abhyasena tu kaunteya vairagena cha gruhyate. So abhyasa, we keep practicing to try to bring the mind under control. The mind goes off, we bring it back again. It goes off, we bring it back again. Abhyasa. And vairagya means we try to follow the regulative principles. We avoid the activities that agitate our mind disproportionately. Vairagya. So now we may say that actually it is because of the mind only that I can't do abhyasa and I can't have vairagya. So the very thing that I am not able to do, if I am told to do, how will it work? No, that's why there is progression. It's like a person who's got a fracture, and the person who's got fracture and is getting cured is told, now walk slowly. He says, no, because of fracture only I can't walk, so how can you tell me to walk as a cured fracture? He says, no, whatever you can walk, you walk. Walk a few steps. Don't walk till it pains too much, but walk a few steps. And by walking a few steps, gradually the strength recovers. And then the person begins to walk. Similarly, we may feel that actually you are telling me to chant Hare Krishna to control the mind, but it's because of uncontrolled mind only I am not able to chant. So what to do? No, keep chanting. We may not have full control over our mind, but certainly we can have some level of control. And that level of control can keep increasing as we move forward. So abhyasena tu kaunteya, and then vairagena cha gruhyate. Vairagya means detachment. One has detachment. No, I will not get involved in these things. There are certain activities which are undesirable, doing which will get us simply entangled, unnecessarily, ceaselessly entangled. So we don't want to get involved in those activities. So vairagyena cha grihyate. So by abhyasa and by vairagya, one can steadily move forward in one's spiritual life. Steadily. Without much difficulty. Abhyasena and vairagyena. So in this way, if one moves forward, one will be able to control the mind, Krishna is telling. So Prabhupada explains from the bhakti perspective what is abhyasa and what is vairagya in the purport. And then Prabhupada says that actually when we practice spiritual life, Prabhupada quotes from the Bhagavatam, this attachment is called Pareshanubhava. So, Bhakti Pareshanubhava Viraktiranyatra cha. So, the exam, this verse comes in the 11th canto, which says that, how does one, what does one do when one feels weak? One eats. When one eats, one gets taste, one gets strength, and one's hunger disappears. So, like that, one's hunger disappears, one gets taste, and one gets, oh, it's so delicious. And then, one's strength, one gets nutrition also. So, like that, when we fix the mind on Krishna, when we actually remember Krishna, all these things happen. What all happens? Firstly, when we remember Krishna, we get, yes, we feel strengthened. Our hankering goes away. We are hankering for so many objects in this world. When we get Krishna, yes, I'm satisfied with this. I don't need anything more. The hankering goes away. Then after that, we start getting taste. Oh, this is so nice. Remembering Krishna is so nice. And we feel strong also. Yes, come. Whatever temptations come, I can face them. So Prabhupada gives that example over here to say that the more we engage in devotional service, the greater the satisfaction that we get. And he gives the disease metaphor also over here. Now Krishna will conclude this in one more verse, after which Arjuna will ask another question. So Krishna gives a general point over here. Asanyatatmano anayogo dushprapiti nematihi pashyatmanatu yatata shakyo vaptum upayatah. So he says, asanyata. Asanyata means unbridled, uncontrolled. So when the mind is uncontrolled, yoga dushprapa, that perfection of yoga is impossible to attain. Vashyatmana tu yatata. However, if one brings the mind under control, and yatata, one endeavors. By endeavoring, one brings the mind under control. Shakyo vaptum upayataha. One will be able to attain. So, what is the point of this verse? The point is that if the mind is uncontrolled, yogic perfection is dushprapa, is impossible to attain. But if one controls the mind, vashyatmanatu yatata, by proper endeavor, by proper process, then shakyo vaptum, it is possible to attain the success. Shakya means possible. So the point which Krishna is making is that he is being encouraging without being compromising. He's encouraging. Yes, it's possible if you endeavor the right process. But it's also uncompromising. So A and B are uncompromising. So if you can't control the mind, you will not attain yogic perfection. So one who doesn't control, one will not attain. So that means it's a requirement which has to be met. So he's uncompromising. But at the same time, he's also understanding and encouraging. There is a right process. If you follow that process, you will be able to control the mind. Pashyat mana tu yatata. Bring the mind under control and endeavor. You will attain success. So Krishna is offering encouragement to Arjuna over here. Yes, it's possible for you to do it, Arjuna. If you just keep practicing, you will definitely achieve it. So what is the process? That Krishna will talk about later in the Bhagavad Gita. He's now talking directly over here. It will come several times, and most directly yoga and Ashtanga yoga and Bhakti yoga will be contrasted in the 8th chapter. And there in 8.14 Krishna will tell what is the process? The easy way. Here Arjuna has said it's difficult to do this. Krishna said it's easy to do. What is easy to do? Bhakti yoga. The verse, Nanichitaha satatam yomam smarti nityasham tasyaham sulabha partha nitya yuktasya yogina. In the whole Bhagavad Gita, this is the only verse which talks about the attainment of spiritual realization being easy. Sulabhaha. How is it become easy? For one who remembers Krishna and uses that remembrance of Krishna to control the mind. So here Krishna concludes this question of Arjuna. It's a two-verse question and a two-verse answer. In two verses Arjuna expresses apprehension, and in two verses Krishna gives clarification and encouragement. So he says, yes, it's difficult, no doubt, but by the right process it is possible. Just like the example of darkness and light. Now, darkness is impossible to remove if we don't have the right process. By punching the darkness, by cursing the darkness, by kicking the darkness, we can't remove it. We need to get light. So Krishna is similarly, if you don't use the right process, then we can't remove the darkness. We have to have the right process. Sometimes people feel that I've got some anarthas. You know, I just use willpower to deal with them. See, willpower alone is not enough. Now, if somebody has, we have discussed this earlier also, if somebody has got cough, somebody has got loose motion, by willpower, no. willpower I can't deal with. Yeah, disease. Willpower is required, but willpower has to be coupled with a process. A curative process. Doctor, take this medicine, then I'll be able to cure. So willpower alone is not enough. Willpower coupled with a process will lead to elevation for us. So Krishna is telling, shakyo vaptam. It's possible, but how? Yatata, endeavor. Endeavor vashyatmana. Bring the mind under control, endeavor with the right process, and then you will attain perfection. So after hearing this, Arjuna will ask another doubt, and that we will discuss in the next class. Thank you very much. Hare Krishna.